Translation. This particular time is most inauspicious because at this time the horrible looking ghost and constant companions of the Lord of the Ghosts are visible. Kashyapa had already told his wife Diti to wait for a while, and now he warns her that failure to consider the particular time will result in punishment from the ghosts and evil spirits who move during this time along with their master, Lord Rudra. Om Ajnana Timarandasya Jnanandana Salakaya Shakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Yena Buddhade Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dharati Swapanantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So in the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, there's Krishna says, Adharma Bibhavat Krishna Pradushyanti Kula Striya Striya Dustasu Vaishneya Jayate Varnasankara. So that verse is explaining that if in society the elders are not there, then who will protect the women? And ultimately, women become polluted, and the result will be unwanted progeny. Now, unwanted progeny is a translation of Varnasankara, and is referring to these creatures that are described here, that will then take birth as our little darlings. And this verse is like pretty ghastly. Goratama, Goranam, Goradarshan. It is like, okay, translated as the most horrible, to Goranam, of the horrible, and the Goradarshan, the horrible looking. So, pretty horrible. What to say? It's quite emphasized. So in this way, different souls are attracted into the womb according to the consciousness of the parents. Therefore, in Vedic culture, sexual activity is not only for enjoyment, but it is for producing children. And then, of course, enjoyment is there. Throughout the universe, living beings are enjoying sexual activity. And as one comes higher and higher in the universe, the living beings become more and more focused on the dharmic side of the whole exchange. Like it is said that the Prajapatis, they reside above the heavenly planets. In the heavenly planets, the demigods are enjoying also sexual activities, and they have much better facility for that than we have. The bodies are more suitable. And then, beyond that, are the Maharjana and Tapa Lokas. So the Mahar Loka is the residence of the Prajapatis. And that is where the Prajapatis are first residing. When Lord Brahma, in the beginning of the creation, is all alone on the lotus flower, he's within the universe. But the universe in itself is, the creation of the universe is not completed. It is said that there is Sarga and Visarga, or two stages of the creation. One is the first stage, Sarga, coming from Lord Vishnu, and the whether universes are emanating from the pore holes of the Lord, and so on. And then the second stage, Visarga, is the secondary creation which Lord Brahma is executing. Sometimes Lord Brahma then is not known as the creator, but is known as an engineer, the engineer of the universe. Why is he an engineer? Because he's taking ingredients that are already there and then putting them in different orders and in this way creating all kinds of things. So he's more an engineer than a creator, because all the elements are already there. It's in the whirl of the lotus flower. So in the central area of the lotus flower, all the ingredients for the creation are there and the living beings are there. Then Lord Brahma begins to place all the living beings in their various positions. So some ask about, you know, when do human beings come to the planets? When Lord Brahma places them there. Because there are human beings from the very beginning of the creation. It is not that they evolve at one point, and that for a long time there are aquatics that then eventually crawl on land and on four legs or whatever, and eventually lose their tail and one day, you know, take the human form of life. It's not that our ancestors are monkeys, what to do, right? Although they think they found the missing link in Africa recently. But it's not so convincing. Still, the question remains unanswered, and that is Prabhupada's question. And the question was, if there were monkeys that gradually evolved into man, if monkeys turned into man, then why are monkeys not turning into man today? Here are monkeys, here. So, they're not turning into man. Why not? Why did they stop turning into man? So that's a very interesting question. And Prabhupada had this kind of deep and simple, penetrating logic that just, you know, whereas many in very complex ways have endless big discussions about evolution or no evolution or creation or like intelligent design, you know, it's like evolution or intelligent design, then Prabhupada simply asked these kind of questions, you know. There are monkeys. Why are monkeys not turning into man today? That question is not answered. So, of course, one can speculate. Anyone who is creative can come up with some argument. But one can think of an argument to defend any position. There were special rays in the universe, and then only that time monkeys turned into man. Okay. Nice. Are you writing fairy tales, maybe? Probably. So, what to do? Is it science or is it science fiction? That is the problem. So we see that according to the Vedic understanding, Lord Brahma is placing all the living beings into different positions, and he finds the living beings in the core of the lotus flower. And as it is stated that each of these living beings already carry a certain karma, because many were already in the material universe before. And at the end, at the time of the dissolution of the universe, went into the body of Mahavishnu along with all the elements and so on, and simply remained there for the entire night of Brahma. And then when the universe again reappears at the day of Brahma, these living entities who were already in the material world now again return to the positions they had attained when the universe was dissolved. And so there were human beings when the universe was dissolved, and these human beings now again, by the arrangement of Lord Brahma, will be in the position of human beings. Gradually, yes, he is step by step. He begins with his mental sons, sons that come from his mind. These are great sages. And these sages reside in higher regions in the universe. And some of them are Prajapatis. And it is said that in the Maharjana and Tapaloka, in the Maharloka reside the Prajapatis. They are sages that perform austerity and only engage in sexual activity to obtain suitable progeny. Of course, they are also enjoying sexual activity. Then there is on the Janaloka, the residents are sages, they are married, but they are celibate at the same time. On the Tapaloka, the Brahmacharis reside. And finally, on Brahmaloka, the Sannyasis. So, just see Varnashram in the universe. Right there. So one attains different positions. Those who are pious and try to enjoy the senses, they can attain the heavenly planets for some time. And those who are impious and try to enjoy illicit sex, they can go to the lower planetary system and enjoy red-hot iron forms of their sexual objects. Let me say it like that, because these days, with the orientation issues, you want to, you know, it's not clear anymore. In the Bhagavatam, it's referring to a man who has to embrace the red-hot form of a woman. Anyway, the point is that according to the way the living being deals with sexuality, accordingly, the living being is placed in different levels of the universe. So, this is the abode governed by the mode of passion. Every living being that takes birth in this particular situation is afflicted by passion. And that is why we're here. Passion is a very strong force. It is said that the modes of nature combine in a person. And because there are three modes of material nature, Srila Prabhupada explains it, it's like mixing colors. Right? That one can, when from three colors, one can make so many colors by mixing them. Haven't done it for a long time, to be honest, but I still remember yellow and blue makes green. Right? Like that, you know. And of course, I know very well that if you take something reddish and yellow, you get nice orange. Talking about mixing colors, that much I still remember. Otherwise, I'm a bit dull on mixing colors. Not my thing these days. It's been a long time. But mixing the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, one gets different combination. One could be in goodness, goodness, goodness. Or one could be in goodness, goodness, passion. One could be in goodness, goodness, ignorance. So you can understand somebody is very good. A lot of goodness, but there's a slight trace, a slight inclination towards ignorance. For example, Ajamiya is described as before his fall down, he was the best student in the ashram of his teachers. He was extremely qualified. And somehow or other, the teachers thought, he's our star student. It's just amazing. We never had such a boy in the Gurukul. So then they thought, let us do his astrological chart and then we can see, what extraordinary karma he has. So they did the chart and they saw that it wasn't that good at all, and that it was only for a certain period good, and then that it would take a turn for the worst, and that there was actually affliction of some ignorance there. Rahu was in the wrong placing, and you know, that gives room for some tamaguna to kick in. So they quickly told him that he should not be a brahmacharya anymore, and they married him off. And that's how he was already married when he saw the sudra embracing the prostitute, but nonetheless fell down and all these things. So, okay, the mixture of the mode of material nature. So I was speaking about goodness, passion, goodness, ignorance. But we could also have another mix. So Prabhupada speaks, you get three, then if you get varieties, you get nine, then if you get varieties, it goes to a list of 27, goes to a list of 81, and like that Prabhupada is discussing, gives different mixes. And now I'm mixing it for you, basically, here. If we say, we start with, say you are in Thomas, you know, and your name is Thomas. I mean, that could be intense, right? You know, I'm saying it would be difficult, you know, like Bhakta Thomas. I mean, it might take a bit longer to get up to the regulative principles. But say it's not that bad. It's Tamas Sattva Sattva. So there is this basic inclination towards Tamas, but the Sattva Sattva two times puts the brakes on it. So that person can control it, but deep down inside this tendency is there. Say there's Tamas Rajas, you know, and then Sattva, then he will have a strong, deep inclination towards Tamas, but due to the Rajas, he can't always control it. It gets out of hand, right? And even although the goodness is in the back and says, I know, I shouldn't do this, he feels guilty. In Tamas, there is no feeling of guilt. It's like, on the Spanish farm, when I used to be involved there, for 8 years I was involved in a farm in Spain, and we had, it was a rather large farm, and we had lots of trees, so every once in a while this man would come and make us a business offer to cut the forest, and he wanted to cut down the forest, and well, you know, it's like, yeah, to just sell off a whole forest is a bit extreme, you know. Like, they go in with the chainsaws and mow it down. So it wasn't a good idea, I thought. Anyway, the man would come back again and again and always make an offer. And his name was Primitivo. A nice Spanish name, you know, for someone who has that, who has a little bit more influence of Tamas than the effortless personality. So it's interesting how we see how these modes of material nature are mixing. And you can do the exercise yourself on a piece of paper if you wish, and if you still use paper, or otherwise on your iPad, and write with your finger, Tamas, and see all the combinations you can get. And if you think about how these combinations work, astrology can show us that. We can see in astrology how it is, if it is a sattva tamas tamas or a sattva tamas rajas or a rajas. And we can see such combinations. So it's interesting, the modes of material nature are affecting us in different combinations, and accordingly bodies are attained. So here, it's rajas on this planet. So, you know, generally rajas is the predominating mode, and then, you know, you can have some other sattva, tamas. So, of course, that doesn't mean that there can be no one who is in the mode of goodness, and, but it is rare, very rare. Rajas is very strong. And so even in those who have a strong influence of the mode of goodness, you don't have to look deep most of the time to find the rajas and to also find some tamas. So that is the nature of these mixes. And astrology also, of course, I'm saying astrology several times now, and so that forces me to say something about astrology. In the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it says that astrology is relevant to that what takes birth, because after all, astrology is about making a birth chart. Right? That's what it's about. And then it says, but the soul never takes birth. So that sort of gives us the final conclusion of astrology. It's not relevant to the soul. Therefore, through astrology, one cannot actually determine the destiny of the soul. But one can determine the destiny of the body, and one can determine the destiny of the mind, and one can determine the destiny according to karma. But tasyaiva hi te kovido yad brahmatam talabhyate upariyada, that the living beings, they are attaining according to destiny positions in the higher regions of the universe or in the lower regions of the universe according to karma. Everything is predestined according to karma. It's all destined to happen. Yeah. Everything karma. It's a scratch on your car yesterday. It was your karma. Right. What to do? Just everything predestined. So this question was asked to Srila Prabhupada, is everything actually predestined in this world? And astrology seems to indicate it, because some of these astrologers are amazing. They tell you exactly, you know, what's going to happen, and then it happens. It's like, oh my God. You know, and they know everything. You have a wife and she three children. How do you know?
I asked your friend.
They can know such things. There are so many techniques in astrology which are very interesting. It's like an expert Vedic astrologer can see what a person, what is the purpose of a person who is coming. He looks as someone comes into the door, and he can see by the way he comes into the door what he's going to ask. He can tell from that which foot and so on, what he looked at first, and all these things. And he reads these signs, and then he knows. He knows the question the person is coming for, and then sometimes they say, write your question on a piece of paper and fold it. Right? And they don't look at it. Right? And then they answer the question. It's from reading those signs. So there's so many things that they can do in this astrology. It is amazing. But all they can see is what is predestined by karma. So when the question was asked to Srila Prabhupada if everything is predestined, he said, it is, as long as you are not taking to devotional service. As you are in material life, you cannot really change your destiny. In this regards, may I bring in an example. You know, once upon a time, a long, long time ago, you know, It used to be so in this world that suitcases had no wheels. Oh, really? Can you believe it? You know, I mean, why in the world wouldn't people wheels on the suitcases? Well, they just forgot about it, due to tamas. And suitcases had to be carried, and some may remember, you know, carry it in the right hand until the fingers were like this, move it to the left hand until those fingers were like that as well, put it on your shoulder until one shoulder was like totally crooked, you know, carry it on your head until your neck was sort of like, beginning to ache, or try the donkey method and put it on your back, sort of leaning over. In Turkey, they carry things like that. In India and Africa, it's more on the head. In Turkey, they carry things on the lower back. You see men carrying around 30 car tires on their lower back. Bend over, and he's looking at them. Turks are strong people. Yeah, it's interesting. Anyway, karma is like that. I was in the Netherlands. Now, the karma of the Netherlands is wet. It's kind of wet karma. And it's kind of cold karma. It's kind of white face, red nose karma. Pale face, red nose karma, because there is plenty of rain. So I was walking on the street with a drop hanging on my nose, and I don't know how it happened. But I went into this shop, and it was a travel agent. And next moment, I booked a ticket to the sunny beach on the equator, Mombasa. Going to Mombasa, you coconuts. Coconuts. I went and sure enough I came, you know, and it was coconuts, you know, everywhere. Hey man, this is good. Mango, you. I did it. I defeated my karma. I got rid of it. Yay. You know, it was high time. I had enough of it. You know, rain, cold, wet socks, you know, name it, all these things. No more. Coconut. Okay, life's good, you know. They don't even have peanuts over there. It's only cashews. They give them away, you know what I mean? So cheap. Yeah. So, eat coconuts, or drink coconuts and eat cashews. Meanwhile, I went to the beach. It was a bit warm, you know. Yay, warm, and I sat down under this palm tree, and it was all right, until from the palm tree, suddenly, plop, plop, scorpion, whoa, scorpion, you know, scorpion, whoa, scorpion, right, get out of here. Anyway, you know, a good story to tell when I get back home. I had to fight off this scorpion. Defeated him. He just walked away. But anyway, then again, plop, another scorpion. I go, gosh, this tree is full of scorpions. So, you know, I was destined to suffer, and it came back, this time in another form, but it came back. So, okay, you know, I'll go for a swim. Then as I was about to go for a swim, some local came and said, no, you can't swim. No, it's high tide. I said, I'm from Holland, you know. Come, we can swim. He said, yes, you can swim, but the sharks also swim. And they swim over the reef when the tide is high. I said, sharks. So I was sitting on the beach, not under the palm trees, but under my towel, you know, to get a bit of shade. And I realized, you know, if you're destined to suffer, you're gonna suffer. And I realized I had only moved the suitcase to the other hand. But I hadn't really removed it. And that is material life. You can, it looks like you can fix your karma. It looks like we can do things to improve the conditions of life. Yay. If you're smart, you know what I mean? I was smart. But you can see how from this example, what's happening. All you can do is move the suitcase of karma from one place to the other. And you carry it on your head, and you carry it on your back, and you move from India to Australia, and you move from, well, anywhere to Australia, really. I mean, if you look what everyone's background is. And then, you know, oh, Australia is so nice, Australia, we have it so well. Oh my God, the bushfire season started and rest. Yesterday there was an orange warning. Orange, I saw it. And then the smoke hangs over Melbourne. The fires are everywhere, and the farm is getting worried. The fires are getting close, like we heard a couple of years ago.
Yesterday
it was 10 kilometers from the farm. Yesterday only, and God, we had gold puja there the other day. You know? Okay, it's a dangerous place. These fires can go at 100 kilometers an hour. So at 10 kilometers, that will take them 6 minutes. Yeah, sneeze in a cuff and they're there. Yeah. Anyway, so what to do? It's like in one place you freeze and in the other you get roasted. It's like that, you know. I had to fill out a form in a clinic yesterday and it sort of like said, how much are you covering yourself from the sun? Are you wearing protective clothes? Are you always wearing a hat? Are you wearing sunscreen? From always to sometimes to, well, you know, da-da-da, to never, you know. I mean, where are we? So, in the material world, karma will come in some form or other. The suffering will come in some form or other. And the only way that we can be relieved from it is through devotional service. Because suddenly, at devotional service, destiny changes. We change our destiny. We take it in our hand now. It just changes. No longer can the astrologer tell you anything. And Prabhupada says, you clap your hands in front of the deities. Clap. All that karma, man, the lines in your hand have changed. See, if you clap, you have to face them when you clap, actually. You know, but I probably didn't specifically write that. But in the Nectar of Devotion, it also said that if you, you know, clap your hands while singing for the Lord, right, that all the sinful birds of karma fly away. It's like a tree that's filled with sinful birds, and you clap, and all your sinful birds fly away. Well, I don't know how many sinful birds you have, but I know I've got a couple. Ooh. Yeah, so this is the situation. God knows who we were in our last life. Some have taken birth in a Brahmin family. But then if we get really specific about it and we just politely in private ask the Brahmin to tell us honestly in front of the deities with his hand on the Bhagavad Gita and like being reminded that severe reactions will come if he lies. And if we ask them, did your parents perform the Garbhadhana Sanskara before your birth? And then most of them will have to say,
Swamiji, those things, you know, generally it is going on, and you know, it's some sort of standard. I cannot exactly say these things because it's not the etiquette, you see, to ask the parents.
They waffle. That's called a waffle. They will not be able to give a clear answer. They'll put some words to create smoke screen. It's the best they can do. Because Garbhadharana Sanskara is gone. It disappeared. And that's no wonder we all have such problems with our minds. Who were we in the last life? Were we with Lord Shiva? Does your alter ego ever come out? Maybe you should ask your wife, does his alter ego ever come out? What to do? That's the thing. So it all gets changed in devotional service, but it is also, everything has to come out in the wash, basically. Karma still comes out in the wash, maybe in a diminished reaction, but it comes out, and we're going through it, and we're getting our purification, a little purification here, a little purification there, it comes and goes. Tateno kampam susamiksamano bunjane vatmakritam vipakam ritvakpapurva yuvidadannamaste yomuktipade sadayapak. If one tolerates that, understanding that this is going on, that we are simply going through the diminished reactions of karma, and then we become the rightful heirs to the mercy of Krishna, if we just tolerate it. Now the question is, so when something happens to a devotee, sometimes someone says, Prabhu, that's your karma. And someone else says, well, it's Krishna. You know, it's Krishna. So when something happens to it, is it Krishna or is it karma? You know, with a devotee. This question is a complex question that has, created quite some confusion and can create a big discussion. There's a contribution of Giriraj Maharaj who quoted Srila Prabhupada and shed some light on the matter. Prabhupada said that once we become a devotee, we get diminished reactions of our previous karma, much less, and so on. And then what happens is, Krishna is there, and Krishna becomes active in the life of his devotee. Krishna was there all along as Upadrista and Anumanta. Krishna was always there as the overseer and as the witness. But now, Krishna is becoming active. And Krishna is actively there witnessing now how the karma is coming and in a diminished way. And Krishna decides if we really still need that karmic reaction or not. And he decides that. And therefore, with some, he just writes it off. There's no diminished reaction at all. Gone. Some he may postpone, and say, okay, you're supposed to get it on, October 6, 2013, and you got up in the morning and thought, it's a lovely day and I'm going to play and it's gonna be wonderful. And then suddenly, like, this block of karma just comes down from the sky. Bang! And it changes things a little bit. So Krishna is not always actively involved in the release of it, but sometimes he is, and sometimes he moves it to other days, and sometimes he just takes it off the bill. So that is like, that's how it actually works. So it's interesting to look at it like that. So anyway, that is why Srila Prabhupada was strict about avoiding illicit sex, because it brings so much trouble. it really brings a lot of trouble. It's entangling us with sinful living beings, and then you have a horrible child, a problem case, one that's turning criminal, and even at a young age, and what you're going to do about it. And such stories are going on. And that's the kind of stuff people discuss in private. Swamiji, can I have a word with you? You know it's coming. Okay. Not too much, I hope. And then some story like that comes out, you know. The real karma story, right? It's not all beautiful. You know, my child does these and these things. What do I do about it? Yeah, that's the result of no karma dana sanskara. That's the first thing. Let us at least understand this now in this discussion of Bhagavatam. That's the result. Yeah. Okay, it doesn't mean that you can't do anything for such a child. Devotional service can purify anyone from any condition. We just chanted that. Om apavitra pavitruva sarvavastakato viva yasmarit pundarikaksam sabayasun santara suci pyantara suci. Yeah, it says sarva avasta kato biva. It doesn't matter what the avasta is, what the condition is, any avasta, any position. So from whether one is pure or impure, from any position, one can reach the gato biva, one can reach the ultimate goal of life. All right, so. But, yeah, sure. I mean, I was on the plane coming from Sydney with the Australian team of, what was it called? It was called, I think, Intellectually Impaired Australians, right? And they'd gone to some Olympic sports match. So they have an Olympic sports for them as well. And, the whole plane was a bit intellectually impaired, if you know what I mean. What to do? That's the way it was, you know. I said some friendly word to someone. not completely social. So what to do? The Garbhadana Sanskara is something to follow, to engage in sexual activities at a proper time with blessings, you know. Everything depends on blessings. Previously in the Vedic culture, if women would not have a child, they would go somewhere and do a puja, right? Do a puja to get blessings so that they could get a child. Nowadays you go to a hospital and, you know, you do a whole thing and you get it checked out and, like, you know, do tests on you and you have to produce some samples for the tests and all these kind of things, and you go, like, is that okay? Can you do? They ask me sometimes, can we produce samples for the test? I say, I don't know. I never did such a thing. Just follow the four regulator principles. So what to do? And the Vedic system all depends on blessings. Right? Everything based on blessings. And that's ultimate, and, you know, we've lost a little faith in it. Where are we going to put our faith? Yeah? In blessings or in modern science? Well, okay. Prabhupada was practical. Use a bit of both. Right? He wasn't just blessings only. Don't take any modern medicine or so on. Whatever works. But in the end, without blessings, nothing's going to work. And even if it seems to work, it's not going to work out in the end. And that's modern society. Modern society, so many successes, you know what I mean? We conquered so many diseases, we, you know, like so many people are now educated, and like, you know, the literacy rate in the world is up, you know, and all these things, yes. And now, it's like in India, India is the funniest country. I'll tell you why. One point is, they educate their daughters, right, to a point where they all become PhDs. But Indian men are scared of educated women, so they don't want to marry them. So it's funny, the fathers, they educate their daughters to a point where they become unmarriable. Isn't that a funny joke? I think it is. It's a funny thing in India today. Yeah. So the Vedic culture, the culture of blessings, rather than relying on this material strength, is ultimately the custom. The culture that's going to bring peace. The successes of the modern Western world are like, you know, very, very serious. I was reading a report wherein geology and archaeology, they are dealing with particular periods in the history of the earth, and there are layers, and according to the nature of the layer, a certain time period, like the Pleistocene or something like that, is determined. And then when the nature of the earth layers changes drastically due to circumstances, due to an ice age or something, then you can see now the earth layers have changed very much. And then they call it a different period. So they say that now we have gone into a new era, a new geological era known as the Anthropocene. Anthro refers to the human beings. It says the Anthropocene. This period will be known as the Anthropocene, the period where, due to human presence, the earth changed so much that it's visible, that it will be visible in the residues of the earth deposits for all times to come. That's what we've done now. We've created acid oceans, and the oceans are the worst of all. The pollution of the air is bad, the pollution of the soil is bad, but the ocean is the worst. And as a result, water will become the biggest problem. And so on. And now India and China are joining the rat race more and more, and the world goes down the tube with modern science. So what looked so good turned out not so good, actually. That's material success without blessings. And if we follow the path of blessings, everything will turn out good. So let's not rely so much on products of modern science. Let's rely on the Vedic tradition. Okay, stopping here. Any questions or comments? Yeah.
Very often we see that many devotees basically have problems, like, you know, they are the friendship and the other relations break when they take through the devotees.
Huh?
So when somebody takes to the process of devotional service, like the chanting and all, they are previous relations and friendship and other people basically go into trouble, you know. So almost
If I get you right, you're saying that when devotees are, that their previous relationships become disturbed after they take up devotional service, is that?
That's right.
I think that's an observation, it's a personal observation. A personal observation is one that is based on what you see in your environment, right? Because on a personal level, all we can perceive is our environment, is the is some people we are dealing with in our community, in our family, in our neighborhood, and you know, that's it. I don't think it's a proper, these are not facts and figures based on proper sociological studies. So whether your premise is right on the in the bigger picture of our movement, that's a question. But for argument's sake, saying that such a thing could happen, then you would say, well, the interests are no longer the same interests, right? Previously, there was a pact in the family to support each other in sense gratification. And if you're no longer part of that pact, it can happen that they don't appreciate so much. I mean, like, you know, in an Indian environment, you know, serving your parents to you know, to the max, right, before anything, which is only culturally an Indian thing. It is a distorted understanding, not based on scripture, because scripture says Devarsi Bhutaptaninam Pityam Nakinkaruniram Nisarajan. It is said that higher than duties to families, to rishis, to devas, to children, to society, are duties to God. Duties to God go beyond anything. Once I gave initiation to some a young lady, you know, but not a minor, like of mature age, after the initiation, a few days later, her mother approached me and says, "You take this back. You have to take it back." You know. And I told the mother, I said, "Of course, the duties children have to parents are emphasized in Vedic scripture, and that is there. And the duties that parents have to their children is also emphasized in scripture." So, but you cannot just exclude the duties to the Supreme Lord. Like everyone has a duty to the Supreme Lord, and that duty is first. And when your daughter takes initiation from this, you know, to serve the Supreme Lord, then a parent has no more authority, right, to say anything in this regards. This is beyond the authority of the parent. It's not that you have unlimited authority. This is where your authority as a parent is limited. You have no right, no karmic right to interfere there. I said, "No, it's very good that your daughter took initiation, because she's blessing you and your whole family. And in fact, not only your daughter should take initiation, you should take also." So, you should take it back, you know. Anyway, what to do? So we had a good time after that. There was a huff and a puff, you can appreciate, but at least I told her. So yes, because we are no longer sharing the sense gratification as an objective, and no longer playing the game, there may be some strain in the relationship that can happen. It's not always the case. There are many cases where actually the parents become favorable, and where they also, especially the mothers, they come first. The fathers always have to have some philosophy and have to hold on to that for a while. But then, you know, but even some of them are coming along quite okay. So now there are many parents and other relatives who are coming along quite nicely also. So therefore, statistically, I'm not sure if you're right. But this sense gratification issue, you know, if you're not part of sense gratification, that's a sore issue for a materialist, you know what I mean? Gosh, you know, I mean, what kind of, well, who are you, you know? You're not enjoying your senses, you know what I'm saying? It's like, gosh, he's lost, brainwashed, joined a cult, a sect, he's gone, he's finished. Can't believe it. Poor guy, we're praying for him. Try to save him. It hurts us so much that he's gone now. He was a good boy until he got in touch with that sect. From that day on, you know, downhill. And he spoiled his whole family as well. Even the children. Oh, it's dreadful. They can't eat this, they can't eat that. Oh, you know, they're not even allowed to watch television, no. They won't let them. Oh, you know, can you imagine? These children will be scarred for life. Can't watch television. Yeah, very serious. Yeah. Other question?
In Prabhupada's books and in many places, he said that Krishna conscious movement, Chaitanya Prabhu movement, has been called many times a cult.
A cult, yeah. That's a dictionary question, you know. I didn't bring my phone and I, you know, so I can't really click and go do that. You can maybe do it yourself, go to the dictionary. But if you look in the dictionary, you see that there are different definitions of cult. One definition of cult is a sect or a group of people who are isolated and who adhere to extreme religious views. but another word for cult, another meaning for the word cult, is simply a particular religious stream without any negative connotation. So when Prabhupada uses it like that in his books, obviously he doesn't use it like some sort of narrow religious fanatic group, you know, put on the danger list, you know, sect in Gefahr. Watch out for the sects. So therefore, you know, we should educate the world. Preaching is educating. We're not just like, you know, chant Hare Krishna or the Yamadutas will come and you have to go to the Vaitarani River. Okay, you know, it's a level of preaching. It's a bit intense preaching, you know. It's sort of, in the West, in the Middle Ages, we would call this thunder and brimstone type of preaching, you know, from the Catholic. Surrender to God or you will burn in hell. And the Yamaduta was still dreaming about him. But if we want people to take us seriously, we have to educate them. To educate him about values, about the good values we have, and why these values are good, and how they benefit society, and how they are relevant to the problems of society today. See, if we don't present Krishna consciousness as with relevant answers to the issues of the day, and then we come and we preach about the Yamadutas, I mean, you know, then if people say, it's Don't be surprised. Our preaching should deal with the issues of the day and explain and educate and offer good solutions. That's what we should do. Not that I didn't like the play, it was all right. But it was in-house, it was okay. But if you're going to do that one for the next, you know, Ratiyatra on the marketplace, sell us something, I think you should have a different play on that day. Otherwise people will say, it's a cult for sure. Jeez, the cult broke loose, you know. Yeah. 400,000 human.
Then I think I've heard of I think there's a conversation. He said there's like humanoids, you know, anger is a person, he says. But these companions, these constant companions of the Lord of the Ghosts, are they like Lord Brahma? By the way, he's got, you know, beings of his kind, they have bodies of ego, bodies of intelligence.
They have bodies that are more fine than ours, yes. Yeah, no, they're species. Yeah, they're species. Yeah. 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 Hobgoblins and all that. Species. Not nice species, though, so don't go there. Thank you very much, Prabhupada.